All right, well, hi, I'm Paul Gasmarino on the User Experience Platform team.
Oh, it's me, yes.
It's you.
My name's James Clark, at ClarkZone. You may know me from Twitter. And I also work on the Windows Developer Platform team as well.
And we're excited to dive into Fluent Design and talk to you about how to build an amazing app with it. And today, since so many of you did not come to the session right before this one, you're lucky. I'm going to recap a little bit of what's going on with Fluent Design for you. We're going to spend most of the time building an app, an awesome app that with Fluent Design, and we'll double-click into starting with the common controls as a baseline and show you the new navigation view. We'll incorporate material and light with acrylic and reveal. We'll scale across inputs with conscious scroll bars and swipe and ink. We'll engage with motion and use something called connected animations. We're going to immerse you with depth with a parallax view and 360 video. And then you guys can get to see a special sneak peek of what might be to come, following along with this direction and talk about how to get started. So let's get right into it. The Fluent Design System. If you've been here, you know that we're entering this world of ubiquitous computing. Satya talked about this a little bit in his keynote as computing at the edge. And we talked about this morning at the Windows keynote as well, how devices and experiences are expanding. And people want their apps and their experiences to come with them on all the different devices with different inputs and modalities in this vast playground that's growing. And we've also talked about how users' creativity is being reignited. You saw that awesome app demo that Lorraine gave this morning where the photos were taken from different, and video clips were taken from all these phones and put together and made into this awesome movie with 3D elements thrown in there and explosions. And together these two trends really signal a change in what users are expecting from us as software creators and what they're expecting from a design system. And with Fluent Design, we're trying to meet these needs and create a system together that expands to this universe of this ubiquitous computing world and this greater and greater user expectations from their experiences. And so to do that, we're shifting things a little bit. We're going from where we had been with a very flat design language to something that's much more immersive and multidimensional. We're going from something that was really hyper-optimized for small screens and touch to something that's hyper-optimized for all these types of screens and all these types of inputs that we're talking about. And something that's going from a lot of consumption and communication to also include more creation and curation and these modern kind of notions of productivity in this modern world. And we've talked about these five elements, these five design elements that are part of Fluent Design, this idea of light and depth and motion and material and scale. And you saw those talked about this morning at the keynote and some of you at the session right before this. And what we're doing with Fluent Design is we're bringing out in a set of waves. We're not, because we want to bring everyone along with us on this journey. And so it's not one of those Microsoft go dark for 5 years, come back with some new design system, but rather we're going to release wave after wave after wave of innovation towards this direction. And we want to help everyone participate in that along the way and give you great stuff you can take advantage of as we do that. So, really we're focusing on this first wave, and some of the things we've shown today are things like Reveal Highlight. That's this amazing new interaction visualization that makes use of light to unify input interactions that move past the kind of binary interactions we've had in the past and work great across mixed reality and desktop and touch and pen and keyboard and gamepad and television and all the different types of devices. We talked about acrylic material and the first of this new category of visual building blocks you can use that go beyond just a basic color palette to give you new richness in creating apps and layering and effects. We talked about connected animations and this idea of motion and how it can give you context and help users move through apps more fluently. And parallax and how apps can draw people in more with this notion of depth with parallax. And we've talked about this idea of conscious controls, going beyond responsive design to design that's conscious, that's aware of what people are trying to do, not just of how big the screen is and how big a window's been resized. And so an example of that with this conscious scroll bar control, that it only, if you're really moving your mouse right by the control, is it like, okay, he's trying to scroll with the scroll bar. Otherwise, if you're using precision touch or actual touch screens, you don't have to have that. And text boxes that are conscious of how you're trying to input into them. And if you're using a pen, let's write into it. And so, you know, that's kind of a, you know, quick recap of some of the stuff that's been going on with Fluent Design. And in this session, we wanted to dive in and make an app and write code together and see how we all do that. And so, James, why don't you introduce us to the app we're going to build?
Yep. We are going to build an app today called Buildcast. Now, if you kind of go back in time a couple of weeks to where we were, we were excited to be kind of unveiling this new design system. And we thought, you know, well, we want to show it in apps, obviously, and so we'll show some videos, we'll show some apps. We want to show it in the shell, et cetera. But wouldn't it be nice if we could actually build something before your eyes that really sort of brings it home how real some of this is? So who here is an enthusiast? Woo-hoo! Who here is a developer? Yay. So one of the things that, and I'm both, I'm an enthusiast and a developer. One of the things that us enthusiasts and developers like to do a lot is listen to and watch podcasts. So we thought, what if we build a podcast app just for Build? So this is something that we put together. We had a number of us collaborating, some designers, and I'm going to show it to you right now. So this is Buildcast, and you'll see straight away that we have this navigation view that Paul mentioned earlier on in the previous talk, for those that were there. And you'll notice that we have the material, this beautiful acrylic texture behind the window shining through. And you can see as I move it around, the sort of richness and the kind of the feeling that just, I don't know, it just feels nice when you use it and you move windows around. Wouldn't it be nice if it worked with touch? And wouldn't it be nice if it had a little bit of parallax? So we've implemented some parallax as well.
Ooh, that's hot.
Now, when we collapse the window, one of the things that we get from our navigation view is sort of the adaptive UI pattern here. And notice how the material itself, the acrylic material, reacts to this. So it's now no longer sampling from what's behind the window, but it's actually sampling from what's in the app itself. Pretty nice. But there's more. Wait, there's more. So what about some animations? Let's show you some animations. So connected animations are something that we love a lot because they really can take an app from something that feels somewhat mediocre and somewhat stilted to use to something that feels really delightful. And I've found myself over the course of the last few weeks as I've been building this, I've literally just sat here going forwards and backwards, forwards and backwards. Sad man that I am. And we're doing more, you know, we're doing this notion of connected animations where we're really connecting content across pages in the app. But we're also doing coordination and other things that we'll talk about in a little bit. So in addition to our animations, what else do we have? Well, we're also using some more of the acrylic texture in the app. And in this case, we're using it to actually sort of feature some of the content. And so as I go to the different feeds, which have their own unique branding and icons, I want to celebrate that in the app and really kind of show that and reflect it. And you can see this is all working kind of fluently together. Gong yourself. You're going to be hearing more about Gong yourself. Anyone that listens to and watches Winners Weekly will be featuring that in a bit. So what about playback? Well, we wanted to do something nice with playback. So we actually built a whole set of custom playback controls. We built a little spectrum analyzer. We've got an amazing guy in Europe that's been working on this and hooked up a really amazing spectrum analyzer control. And we've also got more of the reveal highlight here. So maybe you can see if I zoom in a little bit, some of the reveal on my custom controls down here. And we also wanted to show that we have interaction support. So we built a nice scrubbing control. I can just touch this and get this really fluid scrubbing. And I can even get some physics. If I let go, I can kind of like play with it. So you can literally just waste a lot of time playing around with this stuff. It's incredible. So what about inking? Well, inking is amazing. And you know, if we go into our favorites pane, we've in here used a new tree view control that we've introduced. And we've got this notion of a conscious header, where that header is kind of collapsing away and revealing itself and hiding itself. Now, we talked about the Gong episode of Windows Weekly earlier. So one of the things that we wanted to do was to actually take a screenshot in the app and allow some inking. So this was Mary Jo showing this gong, which is like whenever Mr. Throt gets a little bit overboard, she hits the gong, and it's this very funny thing. So we're going to show you some inking with gongs later on.
Uh-oh.
Awesome. So that's a little sneak peek at the app. And
that's fantastic.
We're now going to take you through and show you essentially what was the app before we added any of our new beautifulness to it, and how did we go add that stuff.
That is awesome. And so to do that, I think, you know, as you should, we're going to start with the common controls, because the common controls build a lot of the Fluent Design system in for you automatically. And so if we look at the demo James showed us of that app, There's a list view control in there, and so we're seeing some of the reveal highlight and things kind of built in because of that. I saw that you had a command bar in there, and so you're getting some of the Fluent design kind of coming through there. And of course, you know, the big thing that we saw was there's this navigation view. And so we finally, yes, we finally have a navigation view control, and it's a lovely thing. And so we're super excited about that, and it's great to see it used in the app. It's more than just a control, but it also gives you an overall structure to the app. And so there's the pane that you saw, but also the overall structure that allows it to have support for things like those different display modes in a great way. And so there's a minimal display mode supported. So if your app is very narrow or it's running on a mobile screen or split view on a small screen, you can have the hamburger button, but no pane visible until you click. It also supports, if you make the window a little wider, you can have a compact display mode where there's a little sliver so you can get to those icons right away. But if you can also click the hamburger button to expand it in an overlay, that's James showed you that overlay that was happening. It also supports an expanded mode where it's in, you know, directly next to your content. So if you have a really wide window or you have enough room for it, you can have it in that way. And it's super easy to use. It builds in, you know, all these animations, acrylic, reveal, and the accessibility, keyboarding, just everything you'd want is built in, and it's super easy to use and very easy to migrate to if you've been building your own navigation view with a split view before. We intentionally designed it to make that relatively straightforward to move over to. So James, why don't you show us how you're using these common controls and navigation view.
Yeah, let's do it. So we're now going to rewind, and this is an earlier version of the app. This is actually an app where we took away all of the niceness. And so as I navigate around, we're not getting any connected animations. And you can see we're not getting any of the kind of new effects here.
Yuck.
God, I just can't look at this anymore. It's incredible. Now, what we have is you'll notice we do have kind of a navigation system in here. And this is actually using the split view controller. It's actually based on the sample code that we've shipped. And it works. It's pretty functional. You know, some of the adaptive layout is there. And you know, it feels relatively good for an end user. However, for a developer, my goodness. This was my Saturday. You have no idea. Lots and lots and lots of markup needed. Lots and lots and lots of code behind needed. And you know, this is all fine. It works well. But it wouldn't it be nice if we could really encapsulate it and make it much, much easier to use? So let's take a look at the new navigation control. So we will come in to our nice pristine version. And if I just collapse down my items, you can see it's now just literally couple of lines of code to get this navigation pattern in the app. And you know, there's a few very simple properties that you can get to set. Do I want settings or not? And then we also have to specify a frame where we want the actual navigation to occur. And you get to customize that and choose what you want to put in there. And then in terms of the items that we have, these are very, very simple structures with text and event handlers and so on. So what we're going to do is just quickly hook this up. So we'll come over to our app. And we'll come over to our on-launched event. And we'll come down. And what we're going to do is take the old App Shell version, and we'll replace it with the nice version called App Shell NavView. And we'll just rerun the app and see what we get. And this is where I pray that Panos, you know, go faster, Panos. Make this machine run. Yay. There we go.
We pray to the Greek gods.
Pray to the gods of Panos, exactly. So here we go. So the, you know, with that much, much compressed amount of markup and code, we now have the new experience in front of our very eyes. Mm. And this is using the dark theme. We do have theming. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. And again, you see the behaviors that we were showing before, where you can see it's using the lovely sampling from my desktop mode. We call that backdrop acrylic. And when I collapse, I get my adaptive UI, I get my in-app acrylic, and you can see this is a little bit more obvious here that it's coming from within the app.
It's nice.
What do you think? Easier? Nicer?
Yeah. James, is there something else you could do? Because you know what drives me nuts is when I see people have acrylic not go to the edge.
I know. What is this dirty, great, fat, black thing at the top? I just can't deal with it. Let's go fix that. So. We want to just nuke the title bar at this point, get rid of it, make it look that sort of gorgeous edge-to-edge look. So that's pretty easy to do. We have a nice little API that allows us to extend our kind of view content into the title bar. So I can just merely turn that to true, if I can type. And then I'm going to just do a little bit of personalization to the colors, because as my kind of theme evolves, we want to make sure we're tweaking the colors nicely. So. Once again, gods of Panos with us, and we'll see something nice and new. It does feel like being a NASA, having this incredible Surface Studio. I'm very lucky in front of me right here. There we go. So edge to edge, much nicer. Woo, nicer.
Love it. Yeah.
Awesome. Back to you, sir.
All right.
Back to you.
So that was great. You know, using the common controls in the new one. We got a lot of the Fluent Design System there by default. That acrylic, that reveal, those animations. But I think we can go a little further. I think there's more we could do with it, with material and with light beyond just what the common controls are giving us by default. I think I saw when you're showing your app that you had this pane, James, that you had used acrylic on. So why don't we talk about that a little bit? You know, acrylic, beyond just what's built into the controls, there's a bunch of ways you may want to use it and you can use it. Of course, you know, you've seen a lot by now of these left panes or right panes, you know, these vertical panes using it. You may have noticed also that we have cases where people have multiple panes and you can actually use different opacity levels of acrylic, for example, different tints of acrylic in cases like that to create visual hierarchy. Really helps with those kinds of cases. If you have navigation along the top, some people are using a pivot along the top. If they have a fewer number of nav links, for example, they don't need a pane on the side. And you can apply acrylic behind that. You want to do the same trick that James showed about going edge to edge on it. And some cases, you want to have acrylic behind the whole background of an app. Now, you probably don't want to do that if it's like a giant full screen, you know, app having acrylic all the time behind it. But if it's something that you want to have be more lightweight or ephemeral, like the calculator app, or a small little experience, that's a great way to use acrylic as well. And you don't have to use it only with composing to the background of an app, but you can also use it within an app to create a sense of layering and depth within the application itself. And so this shows what we call background acrylic and in-app acrylic. And I think that pane you were showing is what we call in-app acrylic. There's a lot of flexibility with it. We can tint it, we can change opacity levels, and we've made sure that all the default resources that we provide for you with acrylic, and I'll show some of those, have all the right legibility to them and so forth. And if you just follow the guidelines, you'll be sure you're meeting contrast ratios with your text and images and all that sort of stuff, UI elements. But if you want to go beyond that, you can, and you can even customize them to do your own branding that you want to do with acrylic. You just want to be thoughtful about legibility and that kind of stuff if you go off the rails. But just being on the rails, it's super simple. There's tons of great built-in resources you can just start to use. And it's as easy as setting a color on something, frankly. So it's really, really, really simple and so powerful, all the stuff that you get with that. So why don't you show us how you're going to incorporate that?
Let's do it. So we've got our navigation view, and it's given us this acrylic material by default. And we've shown how it can kind of adapt and change between in-app and background acrylic. Now, the thing that we didn't show you is that it also is responsive to theming. So if we switch over to the light theme, you'll actually see a nice version here that I actually really like a lot. And it's just literally built into the navigation view, and we get it for free. And as Paul mentioned, we can also customize it. And so if we turn on our custom branding, and then we'll just relaunch. You will see the tint of that acrylic get introduced. Now, this is all for free, and so what we're really trying to be mindful of, making things possible first, then making things easy, and then finally making things default. And this is a case where we did work, a couple of releases to go to make this possible. We then, have made it easy in the creators update, and now we're making it the default in the controls. And you're going to see us follow this pattern again and again as we go through the different waves of the design language.
Yeah.
So we've got our now nice design version of the homepage. We're in our custom theme. You can see our custom acrylic. You can see it's still got its transparency effect there, but it's now customized. What I want to do is go in and actually add that header. So if we nest in and just have a look at one of these, you'll see. That looks like, let's go and have a look at it and see what we have there. What we should have there is a solid color. And what I want to do is reveal the image behind it. I want to use that material to kind of like celebrate the branding. I showed this in the initial demo. And so what I'm going to do is come in and uncomment this image. It's very, very simple, using the image control and binding the URI to kind of give it its imageness. And then in front of it in the header area, I've got the rectangle that is currently being filled with the system control foreground accent brush, which is, again, just a default theme resource that we have. Now, what I want to actually do is replace this with my version. So I'm going to call this now something that I created called in-app acrylic. Very, very kind of, oops, very obvious naming there. So let's go and have a look. Did I spell it right? Yes. Let's go and have a look at the definition. And I've defined this in my style resources. And what's nice about this is it's using this new type of brush that we call an acrylic brush. It's encapsulating all of the policy, all of the power management, everything that we need. And we can just apply it anywhere in the XAML tree that accepts a brush. You can put this in there. And as Paul showed, we have some really good defaults. We're actually working with our designers. We decided to kind of customize a little bit. And so we've done that and go in. And we've just set a tint color, the sort of white color, to give that nice effect. So that is adding some acrylic to a custom control. Now, the policy aspects are interesting, and we've already had a little bit of feedback about this on Twitter about, you know, why does this really nice effect disappear when the foreground switches? And I'll just demonstrate that. First of all, let's go look at what we did. There, it is actually now doing it. Yep, there you go. But what about this policy question? Well, if we have multiple apps that are using acrylic, You can, from an experience perspective, start to get this notion of stacked opacity, where you see through, see through, see through, and you start to look at the desktop going, I can't tell what the heck's going on. So one of the reasons that we do what we do is to try and kind of, you know, make it simpler for the user to understand. So what you can see is I've switched into File Explorer, and it's disabled the background sampling mode. The second big reason, and this is a really important reason, like battery life is super critical to us.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's something that we obsess about. We have teams of people that really, really focus and worry about battery life. And so the other big reason here is to have the policy in the system to really make the system power aware so that we can actually really adapt and make sure that when we're running on battery and when the battery's getting low, that we can really you know, make sure the right thing happens and we preserve battery life.
And in some cases, if you're just using the acrylic resources we provide, all those policies, user settings, those are all built in for you. So if you're on energy saver mode or something, some of these special effects might get turned off automatically, and you don't have to worry about that as the app developer. The system's taking care of that for you as long as you're using these resources that we're providing.
Absolutely. So there we've added some acrylic. Awesome. What's next, sir?
All right. Well, we got, you know, in terms of getting material and light in there, we got some material, but I think there's some more, you know, light that we could get in there. In particular, when I was playing around with your app before you did all your improvements to it, one thing we noticed is that while you get reveal highlight by default with a lot of the controls, like command bars and list views and navigation views, sometimes if you're building a custom control, you might want to have to apply that yourself, because reveal highlight, there's certain cases where it makes sense to have it. And it's a really complicated, you know, rich effect, in some ways even more complicated than acrylic. And so, you know, how can you do that? And we're working to make it really easy for you. So not only is it built into a bunch of the controls, but it's been exposed in a layered way so that you can take advantage of it when you're building a custom control to put together. And so that's when you want to apply it based on context. And some cases you want to think about is if you have high density interactive content areas. So if you're building some control where you're putting a lot of buttons next to each other that all kind of are supposed to feel like a little toolbar or something, and for some reason you're not using a command bar, but you're doing that yourself, that's one case you might want to turn on reveal there. Or if you have a set of interactive elements that are homogeneous in some way and they're grouped together in a region, especially if there's things that you're not putting borders on, that's another time when you might want to take advantage of applying reveal yourself directly. And so, thankfully, even for those opt-in scenarios where you have to go apply it, we're working to make that really simple for you. And so, for example, if you're making a UI with a bunch of buttons, it's as simple as applying some button reveal styles and so forth. So why don't you show us? I know you built a custom control.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Well, let's just start off by showing the built-in behavior. So again, in the navigation view, if we zoom in, you can see a lot of kind of subtle elements are coming into play here. You've got the sort of the borders, the highlights. If I actually click on something, we have kind of a click handler there. And this applies, as Paul mentioned, to a number of the built-in controls. So if we go to now playing and have a look at some of the nav bar buttons, we get that same effect, that sort of proximity effect as we come in close. And the other big place where this is automatic is in our list views. And so again, you can see as I hover over these list view rows, you can see this beautiful sweeping effect that you get there. Now, the thing that's interesting is, at work, the mail app just got this treatment, and we got to play with it. And I've literally sat at my mail just like swiping my mouse backwards and forwards. You know how refreshing it is to do that. It's incredible.
Yeah.
We're normally obsessed with reading our mail, and now we can actually get distracted.
I used to do that. There's actually once a usability study about people would just spend hours with marquee selection on the desktop, like back in the day. They just love just selecting and selecting randomly. And I think Reveal is the new marquee selection time waster.
Yes, indeed. We've wasted a lot of time. So what I want to do here, just to show you some of the customization, is I mentioned we built this custom MTC or media transport control thing here. And notice how we have the reveal highlight feature lit up on the buttons there. Well, in our new version that we're sort of working on at the moment, our work in progress, we don't actually have that effect. We've got the plain old kind of plain old Windows 10 version here. So let's go in and show how easy it is to add that. And actually, one of the goals of doing this talk and showing things to you is actually to write as little code as possible, and preferably just write markup only. And this is another example where we're doing that. So what I have here in my panel is essentially a grid. It contains a stack panel, and that's allowing me to organize my buttons. And in the stack panel, I've just got plain old vanilla buttons. I have a style that I've applied for setting some things like colors and widths and so on. And if we go and look at where that's defined, what we can see is exactly what I've done. So I've set a width, I've set a height, some colors, and so on. Now, if I wanted to just take and apply the reveal style to a button, I could literally just point the button directly and have the style of the button reveal style directly there. Because I've defined a custom style, I essentially want to add that reveal ingredient to my custom style. So what I'm going to do is, instead of targeting the button directly, I'm just going to update my style rule here and just essentially say, base it on the button reveal style. Simple as that. It's markup only. And again, all of the policy, all of the sort of clever stuff that we've been adding over the years to support lighting, we have the Phong lighting model in the system from the visual layer, is now just as simple as adding a style property on a control.
That's killer.
So let's just prove that it's working, and there we go. Who likes this? Awesome. Thanks. Oh, actually, one more thing. While we're still here. So one more thing I need to show is my the mighty pen. The pen is mightier than the sword.
Yes.
Notice that this completely supports the pen. And on devices like this, where you know literally I'm just invited in by this enormous screen to want to use the pen, we really want to make sure that we're doing a great job at supporting it with that modality as well. There you go. Cool. Sorry.
That's awesome.
Back to you, sir.
No,
Back to you.
I think especially the fact that as you move the pen closer, it starts to recognize it, and that light sort of starts, and then when you touch it, it's fully illuminated. It just has this very natural feel to it that's pretty outstanding. So we've gotten, we've started the common controls. We got a lot of great Fluent design from that. We added more material and light with acrylic material and reveal highlight. And another big part of Fluent design is this idea of scale and working with all the different inputs in a great way. And so let's take a look at that. One of the things I noticed in the app here, James, is that you have lists of content, and that's very common that people have that in applications. One of the most common things is to show collections of data from a database or some store. And you have actions you can do on them. You had context menus, you had swipe working in the app. You'd lots of ways you can interact with that content, which brings us to this idea of commanding on collections and lists. And one of the things that we've been doing with Fluent Design is thinking about all the different inputs. How can we make sure the system feels optimized for all of them and UIs feel optimized for all of them in a great way? And one example of that is with collections. And so, of course, there's the context menu. And we all have known about context menus forever. What you may not know is that context menu actually can be invoked with every input method that we support. And so if you're using mouse, of course, is the right click button. But with touch, you can press and hold or long press. With keyboard, there's keyboard shortcuts like Shift F10, or some keyboards have a menu button on them. Game controllers have a button that invokes the menu. Context menu is a universal interaction kind of input that, that you can take advantage of. Any input you use, you can use a context menu. So do hook up context menus. That's like a fundamental thing you should definitely do. But the other things you might want to do is look at it on hover UI. A lot of our inputs now, mouse, pen, gaze on mixed reality, have the notion of hover. And so you want to take advantage of that to give people quick access to things like flagging, deleting, renaming, and so forth. You want to think about having the right shortcuts hooked up. That's both in the case where you have common actions like delete. Users expect on Windows that the delete key will delete those things. So don't forget to hook up those shortcuts with a keyboard. And then finally, swipe is something that people with touch and also precision trackpads expect to have starting to work. And so we're excited with Fluent Design. We're starting to bring controls like swipe online that make that easy for you to do. So you can really have a complete picture, you know, 360 degrees of support for all the inputs for commanding. And here's a table that shows some suggestions of things to do. And if you go to our UI guidelines, you can read up on all these. And it's pretty straightforward to start including swipe. And so also menu icons are now supported, little small thing, but just thought I'd throw that in there with this. So James, why don't you show us how you're doing this?
Let's do it. So I'm not going to take you through all of the modalities, as Paul mentioned. I'm actually just going to focus on one of them. I'll give you a quick demo. You can see that we've hooked up the right-click context menu here, and we've got the icons. We've got a single command object behind these, so we have a nice separation where our command is defined in one place, and we then apply it as needed. We've got the hover commanding, which, again, is great for pen. When I don't have any way of knowing there's any secondary UI, obviously, with pen, we need that. So that's all hooked up nicely for us as well. And then finally, the one that we're referring to right now is swipe. And if I pull this all the way over, you can see I'm getting the nice kind of fluid interactions, the overbounce, et cetera. This is all powered by Interaction Tracker and our lower level layer, the visual layer, to get beautiful performance and fluidity. Now, how hard was that to add? That's a great question.
One of the things I like of how you did that is sometimes swipe feels too easy to accidentally trigger. I don't know how people have accidentally deleted messages or things because it's just kind of a quick gesture. And so I think it's really great that the swipe support from Fluent Design supports also a model where it's just revealing commands that you can go click on. It doesn't always have to just instantly do something for cases where that's a little too fragile.
Let's try and add it. So here's our before version. This one has no swipe. We've got the other inputs there. And let's show you how easy it is to do. We have our new feature called the swipe container. And the swipe container is something that you use in collections. You add it into your item template so that it can show up on every row. And the way it works is you need to define your commands as a sort of singular thing in your resources here. So we'll just uncomment this code. We've got a couple of commands here. You can see we've styled them, so we've given them icons and text and a background color. And then we're binding those to our command objects. And then the way we add it into the list view is through the second control here called the swipe container. And the swipe container is something that we put in the item template, so it's there for every item in the list. And it does the magic. It hooks up to the commands that we define. So you can see here we've defined this property called write content, and we're using a static resource to bind into our list of commands. And so literally, again, you know, emphasis on we're doing this in markup, very little effort. There's a bad coder in front of you right now who has made a mistake, so it's not going to start, which is a shame. Anyone can spot it, please let me know. Oh, did I do the terrible thing? Okay, let's see, undo. Isn't it nice when undo works? So I did it wrong. I was supposed to change the grid, so I come into my grid, change it, bang. Thank you for Mr. Tim Hewer for creating that. Just to show that we're fallible and it's all live here. So let's go in and grab this guy. Put him in, and this is a better version. This is the working version. Awesome. You can have this one often. Ooh, yeah, you don't want it. You don't want it. Alrighty, so let's see. What do we have going on? So do we have a bit of swipe? We do indeed. Ooh. So there you go. Wasn't that easy? Woo.
So easy.
Now, one other little small thing I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go into the details page and just show you we do have, you know, much better support now for mnemonics. So for things like keyboard commanding, which is a super critical aspect for many, many constituencies, it's now really easy to get those mnemonics.
Love it. And you just hit the Alt key as a user to get those.
Exactly.
On your keyboard.
Now, I wonder what this would look like if we put it on an Xbox. What do you think, Paul?
Oh, my gosh. I would love to see a universal Windows platform app with Fluent Design on an Xbox.
Yes.
Let's see. Is that?
Let's see.
This input here?
Yes. And it's black. Of course it is.
Is this the right input? Oh, five. Sorry.
off by one.
It can only be human error.
And here is the app, and there's a demo that Paul won't allow me to show you, which is where I can use Project Rome to transfer my PlayState over, which is super cool, but we're not here to talk about Project Rome. What we're here to talk about is the commanding that we just did, and as you notice,
so
the
hot.
Same universal app is running. We've done a little bit of tailoring, very little. Same connected animations are here, same effects that we saw, and
incredible.
You know,
yeah.
Here it is on Xbox. Nice.
Yeah.
Little gentle tap over there. He's obviously gentleman's or lady is waiting for the Scorpio, obviously. So let's see if we jump in and actually have a look at our feed. So the thing I wanted to show you is this command pattern works really well with the controller. So we've really thought about making sure that works. And also things like the navigation pattern, again, coming from the navigation view. I press the back button and it goes back. So the advantage of
and those connected animations
system.
Feel super appropriate on an Xbox, just as they do on a PC.
They do indeed. They do indeed.
Yeah, that's
back
awesome.
To the slide, sir.
All right. Oops. Here we go. I love that. I love universal apps on our different devices. That gets me jazzed. So another type of input that we want to think about optimizing for is pen. And there's been a lot of attention paid to pen today and some of the cool stuff that you saw there, like the ink handwriting into text boxes. I also wanted to point out that there's some model changes coming on with pen. And if you go to David and Shaw's talk later today, they're going to go into a lot more depth about them. But you'll find that Pen with Fluent Design has a far improved model with panning, text selection, how you invoke context menus, drag and drop. It has all the efficiency that you're used to with the pen, but also feels a lot more natural because you can do things like pan with the pen, for example. And so you should go learn more about that. And as a developer, there's nothing you have to do to take advantage of that. Just using scroll views and text boxes, you get that all for free. But something you might want to go and spend some time to invest in is taking advantage of some of the cool inking and in Canvas type of stuff that you can do and gestures. And so, I think James has had quite a bit of fun.
I did have too much fun with this demo.
One. So let's see how
I apologize in advance for this. I really do. So we wanted to try and use inking in the app, and so we had the idea of, well, wouldn't it be nice if we can extract frames from the video and write ink on them? And you can imagine the chaos that can ensue. Now, of late, our good friend Mr. Richard Turner was on Windows Weekly, and he was really trying to extol the virtues of the Bash command prompt system. And of these three people, he's probably the most excited of all three. Now, you can guess. I'm going to tell you the answer and spoil it. It's probably Rich. Now, when I was doing this inking, I started off by putting, WSL, and I realized, well, if I put that, people probably won't know what I'm doing. So, let's instead say Bash, because Bash is something that I think we're more familiar with. So we'll say Bash. The problem is I'm really bad at drawing, and as you can probably tell, this thing here is supposed to be a heart, but it kind of looks like more like an apple, and my wife always kind of gives me a hard time about, you can't draw hearts, and I'm a terrible drawer. So what I thought was, I know, let's use ink recognition to solve this problem. What I can draw, and even in front of this audience today with you all watching, I can probably manage a circle. So let's see if we can do a circle. That's actually pretty bad. Let's try again. I knew this would happen to me. Come on, dude. You can do it. You really want to draw a circle well. Come on. Let's put another one here. Oh, you know what? I'm using the wrong version of the app. Let's try it in the other version of the app and see if that works.
Right.
Where are we? Bash on Windows. Mr. Rich Turner. Bang. Let's see if this one works. Oh, Lord. I hate you.
Oh, no.
The demo failed. Oh, well. There you go. Let's try one more time, see if it likes Mary Jo any better. Nope. Okay. I give up.
Oh.
I give up. That's a shame. That's a real shame, because this is a really fun demo. So what it actually does is it helps me draw a heart in a really nice way. So it uses ink recognition. And it uses this ink analysis feature to basically determine my circle, which, goodness me, it doesn't want to do for me right now.
I promise, I've seen it. I bear witness.
And we've drawn hearts all over the screen. It's like, look, this one's big. Look, this one's small. God, I'm going to try one more time just to see. Like, let's try this. Let's try this. Come on. No, just doesn't want to do it.
Oh,
okay.
Turn off magnifier.
Oh, is it magnifier? Is magnifier killing me?
How do I turn off? Magnifier is your friend and your enemy.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
I wonder if that's
try,
what it is.
Try without that.
Let's try. Debugging a demo in public. Yes! Yes! Yes!
That's what it is. touch magnifier is wonderful if you're trying to zoom in accessibility, but it does eat the first touch clicks. And so you should turn that off if you're trying to touch test and stuff.
Come on. And now I can't draw again. There you go. Woo. I think Mary Jo is fairly positive. I think one of these two gentlemen, and you can guess which. So we thought that Rich couldn't be here. We thought we'd actually share this with Rich, and we've just tweeted out there at Rich Turner. Let's do this live at Rich. Not Rich.
Live to Rich.
There he is. There's our good friend. Wish you were here, love. Hash. Fluent design. And we'll just add a dot at the beginning because we're hip. Bing, there we go. So, you know, ink is cool. Ink is really cool. And as more and more devices support it, this kind of, you know, large form factor device is an awesome example. It's pretty badass. And getting this ink canvas in there is really just, you know, very small amount of code. Getting the ink toolbar is a very small amount of code. The actual demo here is using the ink analyzer where I'm going in and I'm detecting some drawings. I'm looking for circles, and when the magnifier's off, it will actually find circles, which is hilarious. And I'm then adding a heart, and this is just, again, using the smarts that we get in Ink Analyzer to determine the bounding box. And this is, again, the intelligence that I get, is that as I get that drawing object, I can actually see where's the top, where's the left, width and height, and I can then use that to make my heart the right size. Whew. It finally worked.
Love that. That's really good. All right, James, so we got great controls being used, and you started getting material and light into the app, and you started scaling to all these inputs, but I want to see, you know, how you did that awesome motion, because I could just, yes, you know, go back and forth and watch that, you know, all day. And I thought it was fun that we captured some freeze frames of it just happening, and it's just kind of cool to see all the orchestration of stuff that's going on, you know, in the end when you kind of do this motion. But I did want to say a couple words about a little bit about why you might want to do connected animations too. I think we all kind of intuitively get it and think it's just awesome. But something to think about is it really helps keep users engaged while navigating through screens in your app. It keeps their attention. They kind of see the thing moving through screen from screen from screen. And it just keeps that engagement going. It also aids usability by emphasizing common content between views and helps you contextualize. And that's true both when you're going in deeper levels as well as when you're going back out to know where did I come from? I just landed in this new screen, this new place. It's great because it's also incrementally adoptable. So it doesn't mean you have to rewrite your whole app all over. You can start adopting it in appropriate places, you know, over time, more and more. So, and we've got a really great API around it, great docs that show that, and so you can take a screenshot of this slide if you want, but James is going to come show us how he actually did it here, so let's do that.
Let's do it. So before we show you the after, we'll show you the before, and we actually went and talked to some folks in Europe recently and went visited some customers, and we showed them some of these ingredients. We gave it all, you know, we didn't tell them the name or anything, but the thing that really bubbled to the top in terms of the thing that really resonated most with the developers and designers we showed this with was connected animations. And really, if you look at this stark comparison, this is the sort of the fluid version. And this just feels like it should just be like that, right? You know, this is how it should be, is this fluid coordinated animation. And when we go and look at the sort of stark utilitarian version where things pop, it feels wrong. It just feels not very enjoyable to use. And every time I use, you know, an app that feels like that, just a little part of me dies because it just doesn't really inspire me very much. So we're really, you know, big believers in this, and you know, a lot of the research we do with users tells us that this really resonates with users. It's the kind of thing where it really does change the star rating, and it's like, I can't tell why, but there's a reason, and this is definitely, you know, one of the reasons. So how hard or easy is it to do this? Well, I'm not going to go into huge depth and show you all of the coordinated aspects. I'm going to leave that to Tim and Ashish, who are going to talk about some stuff later on. I'm just going to show you the most basic thing, where we take that kind of podcast image and we make it kind of move and travel from the source page over to the target page. So to do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to comment out my current navigation code. I'm just using the navigate method on the frame object that I have, very familiar to us. And instead, I'm going to use one more line of code and a slightly different signature here. So the first thing that I'm going to do is to prepare my animation. And because the item that's animating is in a grid, it's in a collection, we have to go and find that guy. And this used to be a little bit more painful back when we first introduced connected animations. You'd have to go and manually walk through the collection and find it. We now have this great helper on both grid views and list views called Prepare Connect Animation. It takes the name of the image that you're looking for in the collection, and it takes the clicked item, which is the one that the user selected, and it basically returns to us the element that we need to trigger the connected animation on. I'm then using a helper here, and this helper is helping me do some of the coordinated animation aspects. I'm not going to show you that. You need to stick around if you want more details there. What I'm instead going to show you is where we receive that on the target page. So if we go to our feed details page here and have a little look down here, what you'll see is we're receiving that same named animation. We called it podcast image border. It's the same guy. And we're just calling start on it. Now, a little tip. Because this is an image, you know, like when I first started playing with this, I was like, oh, well, of course, when you come to the target page, you want to hook this up in your on Navigator 2 method, probably, right? Problem is with the images, they have to open and load. And so it's actually a much better thing to do to hook the image opened event and set up your connected animations in there. And this is obviously specific to if you're doing image animations.
It's great that the platform has that flexibility.
And so we haven't done a lot of extra work. We haven't hooked up the back navigation. We haven't looked at some of the other customizations. But with that simple kind of from and to hookup that we've done, here is the result. And by the way, I mentioned we want to get more stuff in markup. This is definitely something we're thinking about and imagining. How can we make this more markup friendly in the future? So there you get the forward version. You don't get the back version, unfortunately.
Whew.
Now, was there anything else in there, Paul?
I did notice as you did that, you know, I was trying to call this out a little bit, but see how it's not just that image is moving, but there's this other stuff that's choreographed with it. So this other text is moving, the fetch the latest content button is also kind of coming in with that. And so it's not just taking one thing from the screen and just like moving it, but there's other elements that are part of that second screen that you seem to be choreographing together with that, James. And I
indeed.
Think that's really
indeed.
Fantastic.
Yes, indeed. We love it.
And James and Tim and Ashish will tell us more about that.
Yep. So Tim and Ashish are up next in this room. If you want to get into some more details, they're going to show you more code than we've done. We've done a lot in markup, and they'll walk you into some of these deeper topics.
Okay. Well, then the last thing I think we're missing, we talked about those five elements or five design principles of Fluent Design. We haven't really gotten to depth yet. We've added material, light, scale, motion, but we should get some more depth in there. And I think one of the best ways to start with that is with parallax. And in your app, you've kind of showed that. It's best demoed. But just a couple points on it is, you know, there's lots of times people try to use parallax. They use it often for hero content, like a header at the top of a page or the side of a page. It's scrolling on and off. People use it for background imagery behind a scrolling area. People are using it in photos or content inside list items in grids. And so we're seeing uses of that. I demoed in the earlier session how Groove is the Groove app is doing that in a really cool way. And there's a lot of other opportunities. So when you think of parallax, don't just think of the simplest thing of it, but there's lots of different ways it can be used to add this kind of sense of depth. And it's really valuable because in the natural world, when things are farther away from you, you see them move more slowly relative to things closer to you. And so even though it's a subtle thing, it just creates this sense of depth and draws you into an application. It makes you just feel more engaged with it and more natural. And it used to be really hard to do this.
And
now it's unbelievably simple. And so we're really excited about that. And so why don't you show us how you did it?
I will. Yeah, I mean, it used to be rocket science. And then a couple of releases ago, we introduced some new aspects in the visual layer where we made it possible, but it was still quite a lot of code. But we wanted to make it much, much easier. So if you remember, on our first initial page, I've got it hooked up. And you know, because, again, we're in a multimodal world, we need this to work with touch, we need this to work with mouse wheel, we need it to work with precision trackpad. And when for all of those modalities, we want to get this fluid 60 frames a second animation and all of the personality, the overbounce, et cetera. Now, there's a little known secret that we have in Seattle. There's two, actually. The first one is we do have sun in Seattle sometimes, which, sadly, because it was raining today, that's like, no, you're wrong. But we do have sun, and that's great. The second secret we have is that we have a big mountain. We have a big volcano called Rainier. So we thought, you know, we have this image. We have this lovely sort of parallaxing image. Wouldn't it be nice if we could go and find the mountain? And look, there's the mountain right on the right-hand edge. We call it The Mountain Is Out Today, I think is the colloquial phrase.
The Mountain Is Out Today.
The Mountain Is Out Today.
When you can see it.
Now, we have a problem on this version. The mountain is not out. It's not out at all. Like, we need to go and tease the mountain out here. So what we're going to do is come into the code and show you how easy it is. So we have an image. You can see that it's kind of like a widescreen, wider than it is tall. I can't think of the right phrase for that off the top of my head. Style of image. Thank you. Landscape. Thank you, sir. And at the moment, it's getting close. What we want to do is actually, wow. the mountain just detonated.
I was just shocked.
Didn't want to be hidden anymore. Mountain. Let's unhide it. So I'm going to come in and essentially wrap that image in something that we call the parallax view. And the parallax view is literally just a wrapper. It's literally just something you put the image inside. And then all that we need is to give that view a source of parallax. And so you can see here, we've got a source property, and we've bound the source property to our grid. And our grid is where the scrolling takes place. And so under the covers, the framework is able to go and connect the dots and essentially apply this smooth motion. I can customize it in different ways in terms of the speed, the shift, the start, end values, those kind of things. But to get a basic experience going is literally just as simple as that. Boom. Is the mountain happy again? Let's see. Yay. Oh,
so good. I love this.
Nearly.
Can I do it?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's fun.
We love it. We waste so much time on our team.
Well, that's pretty hot. So I don't know how to top that, but I will say that another thing about depth that people are getting really excited about now is 360 videos. And wanted to my
It's the spinning donut.
This is what happens when you embed an enormous 360 video file in PowerPoint deck sometimes. So bear with me a moment. Well, you know what? Why don't we just demo it instead?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Speaks louder than spinning donuts.
Spinning donuts.
Yes, it's downloading from OneDrive. Yeah. Gosh, we should have thought about that.
Oh, gosh.
All righty, let's see. So when we went to visit the mountain, there was a little secret hiding down here, which is a special RSS feed that has a 360 video in it. And this is actually showing a preview of the support that we're going to be adding for 360 videos. We're very close to being able to put out a sample for this, and our good friends and colleagues on the media team will have more details for you on that. So I'm actually not going to show you the code. I'm literally just going to play the experience. It's very loud.
It is loud, but it's awesome. The platform has support for this 360 media playback for you, and apps like Groove are already starting to use that, and so we're really excited about making that easier for people to use with the sample when it comes out.
Awesome. I love that. It's just really engaging.
Well, James.
But you know the problem with it? It feels a bit flat. You know, like when you're thinking 360,
It does.
Wouldn't it be nice if it was less flat?
Yeah, you're right. You know,
is that breaking your amazing kind of like ending climax to the whole session?
You know, I think we'll see where. Here. I'm gonna try to get this PowerPoint up and back again. Let's see if we have PowerPoint technology. All right. You guys are seeing my desktop, aren't you? What if I do this?
We need more fluent in PowerPoint.
What if we do this? Swap screens. No. Well, let's see here. Hey, sorry, we're going to try one more thing. I don't know if you guys can swap my screens here. So you can see this last video.
Don't think I have it on here. Or do I?
All right, let's try this again.
Can we do it?
You guys seeing? No. Right. No.
Can you go into duplicate mode, maybe?
Yeah, let me try switching.
Hey, right. Let's try this. Let's stick a. Actually, is that wise?
You know what we're going to do?
Yeah, let's stick this.
I'm going to.
Come on, let's do this.
Hey, can you help me get this? I'm just trying to get my
Okay, I think we're good. I think we're good, dude. I think I've saved you. I've saved your bacon. Put it to the other machine. Switch it to the demo machine.
All right, you got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. So.
Yeah, I wasn't switching when I did hear.
This is an exploration. So this is not shipping technology. This is not something that we're saying, yeah, we're going to ship this in any particular time frame. But this is something that we've been experimenting with and exploring, which is UWPs already work in our mixed reality environment. And you know, you can already target both the HoloLens emulator as well as real devices. And with our new holographic headsets that are coming out for Windows mixed reality, same deal there. So this is a prototype that's showing the app we built today. And it initially looks as if it's just a regular old UWP. But if you look very closely, you'll see that the kind of effect that we're getting here is a true sort of depth effect. You can see like a true sort of 3D depth effect. Now, what's really cool about this is a XAML app, it's a UWP. You haven't got to kind of think, oh man, I need to rewrite this in Unity and go and learn all the stuff that I don't know, I'm a XAML guy. And so this is an area we're looking at, which is, you know, the notion of how can we bring more sense of depth, more kind of immersiveness to UWPs when running in an immersive environment. Now, I think if we let the video play, you'll see we're going to actually go to the same video that we had just now. And again, same app, same code, same player that we just showed you. And what happens now is that player is adaptive, so that when we go over and you can see the reveal highlight is shining, and we play this back, it's now on literally mapped inside of my spherical environment.
Yeah. That's an awesome sneak peek of what's to come.
It was worth waiting for.
Now we'll see if technology of today will favor us more. Hey, looks like our deck is back.
Yay.
Can you see our deck?
Yay.
Awesome. All right, everyone.
Fast forward, man.
You're going to see a little cheat here. But I'll skip that video because you saw it. So that's kind of a sneak peek. We built this app up, and just to finish getting started today, there's tons of new stuff in the platform. If you get the latest SDK as it comes out, and these are just some of the high level things, and then other layers of platform below that enable all this stuff. As James was talking about, that approach we take where we enable things and make them possible, and then make them easy and broad across the design system, and so. You'll get to learn about this at some of the upcoming talks. I also want to point out, I mentioned this at the last session, but folks who weren't here for that, we've got terrific new guidelines for Fluent Design we just launched today, and I'll send you the link at the end of this presentation, but I just want to show them real quick.
You're still in prison. Okay, good.
Here you go. And so you can see it's a great new site. It goes into the layout, styling, controls and patterns, gives you design toolkits, optimizing for input, optimizing for things like connected animations, all the guidelines combine design and dev guidance. There's over 1,400 images and videos now. There's tons of, I think, 800 plus code snippets that are part of these. And so as you go through these guidelines, they show you not just how to think about the design and why you might want to implement it, but also how to implement it in code snippets and useful tips and tricks and stuff. And so you should definitely get do's and don'ts, all that kind of stuff. They're very visual and beautiful. Here's the acrylic one. Anyway, you should go check this out, and it's a really great resource to use. So that's the new design guidelines site I want to let people know about. We also have some great samples. There's a new XAML Controls Gallery sample app. If you go down to see us at the beautiful UX booth, at the hub, you can get more info about that and how that'll be available. And there's also the fantastic, I'm sure a lot of you have already been using this one, the Windows UI DevLab sample that lets you go even deeper, these emerging concepts, and go play with those, things like Interaction Tracker, 3D. James.
Yeah, so we wanted to ship this because, if you show code and you don't ship it, it's kind of fake. So we don't want to be fake. We want to actually ship it. Unfortunately, the timing didn't quite work out for us. We were really trying to get all of the bits into the most recent flight for build. Unfortunately, some pieces didn't quite land. This is very, very, this is the artifact
cut off the presses
of being agile. So what we've done is we set up an AKA link. This is actually GitHub WAC Microsoft WAC Buildcast is what's backing this AKA. We have a placeholder there. As soon as there are bits out in the wild that will run the app, we're going to publish the source code, and we'd welcome feedback. We'd welcome people to kind of take stuff that they're interested in taking as well. So that's coming soon.
Awesome. And check out, there's more sessions going on today. In the same room here, I think, or in 6B, is Tim and Ashish's What's New in XAML and Composition session. Later after that, there's the Windows Inc. and Microsoft Surface style session. And then tomorrow morning, there's the Explore Next Generation of Innovation UI and the Visual Layer session. So those are all ones you'll want to check out if you're interested in Fluent Design and the UI tech space. You could also check out the video of the What's New introduction to Fluent Design that happened earlier this morning. There's mini theaters you should go check out. You should go to the Hub North Lobby of the fourth floor. There's the Fluent Design Lounge, and there's a Windows Next Remix workshop. You can go play with a bunch of apps that are starting to use Fluent Design, as well as the beautiful UX booth in the Hub. I know James and I will be there.
Yeah, we'll be there, so come and chat.
So come chat with us. We'll help answer questions and stuff there. And tomorrow morning is also a Channel 9 live talk about some Fluent Design stuff. And some more web and social media stuff to check out, including that second link is that link I just showed you to the dev guidelines. There's also a beautiful new design microsite that talks more about the inspiration behind Fluent Design and people behind it. So
guys and girls, thanks for coming, and thanks for bearing with us as our demos have kind of tried to crash, and we managed to save them at the end. But thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.